Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 380.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we stress out about which costume a four-year-old girl is going to choose from out of three sets of costumes. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and I don't know about you, but my daughter is stressing me out. I thought Halloween was supposed to be the fun holiday. So today, we're not going to talk about my kid and how she's stressing me out, but we will talk about another category of child known as the Nepo baby and how some of them don't like the term Nepo baby. Very surprising. We'll also talk about the most recent techno manifesto from a tech billionaire, and finally, an NEA study on museum and theater attendance and what it means about life. I'm so excited about today's panel. Oh my God. So this first panelist, you've heard him on the show so many times because he's incredible and brilliant. He's a TV writer. He is no longer striking, so he gets to wear that TV writer moniker with pride and with no pang. He is also co-host of one of my favorite pods, folks. He's co-host of the podcast Yo Is This Racist, which is a must subscribe. And what I particularly love is the Venn diagram of Fake the Nation and Yo Is This Racist subscriber. It is like a set of extraordinarily excellent people. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the one and only Andrew T.
I was going to say, I feel like your listeners tend to be just a little bit smarter than ours, but what do I know, you know?
Why would you throw your listeners under the bus like that?
They know what they did. Partially, it's because they call in all the time and we have to be like, ooh, boy.
Well, I love them and I'm grateful for you.
I also love them. I'm just, let's be real here.
He's just being a comedian, you guys. We're also joined for the first time. This is so exciting. We have a first timer on the show, but she's not an alien to podcasts. No. In fact, she hosts two podcasts. One is called Past Perfect and another one is called Not Past It. And she's just extraordinary. And you should also be subscribing to those podcasts. She's the one and only Simone Palanin. Hey, Simone.
Hello. So happy to be here.
And before we get into the show, I just want to remind listeners that if you go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad, you can support the show for as little as $4 a month, which is how much I spent to buy one of those little containers of blackberries the other day from the store. These ones said they were organic, but I look upon them with suspicion. But theoretically, for as little as a little container of blackberries, you can support Fake the Nation, and you can also get bonus episodes of the show. And these bonus episodes is where we really let our hair down, and we get into some ethical quandaries, we get into some stories of assholery. It's a really good time, so go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. And now let's get into it with topic number one. So the Washington Post recently had a piece about how certain Nepo babies like Gwyneth Paltrow worry that the term will negatively impact their children. For those of you who don't know, Nepo baby basically means nepotism baby and refers to the child of an actor, musician, producer, or other industry insider who has likely benefited from having a parent in the field. And this is what Gwyneth had to say. She said, quote, "Nobody rips on a kid who's like, I want to be a doctor like my dad and granddad. The truth is, if you grow up in a house with a lot of artists and people making art and music, that's what you know. There's same way that if you grow up in a house with law, the discussions around the table are about the nuances of whatever particular law the parents practice." So my question for the two of you, is she right? Is it unfair to use this term on the children of the elite?
Yeah, we should be giving a lot more grace to the Nepo babies. They're the true victims here. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Andrew.
I think the one thing that's clear from her statement is she doesn't know enough actual working people, because I absolutely would rip the child of doctors for being a doctor. get right. the hell out of here. But also, it is like, in this whole article, like, so many instances of the Nepo babies talking about how, like, oh, I maybe got my foot in the door. Oh, I maybe got my foot in the door, but everything else was me. I don't think these people realize how hard it is to get your foot in the door in Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's yeah. like the main thing, right? It's like, we're talking yeah. about access. Like, access in an industry like the entertainment industry is huge. And right. like... Yeah. I don't think people are criticizing like the work ethic of these people necessarily. It's just like, it's a privilege. You have access. And, you know, I guess people with privilege typically don't like to be called out on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like Hailey Bieber, who's the daughter of Stephen Baldwin and the niece of Alec Baldwin and Lily, or sorry, no, not her. I'm trying to figure out who said this. Someone, maybe it was Lily Rose Depp, who's the daughter of Johnny Depp and also of some kind of French model, said something about like, it's just, well, I do get my foot in the door, but that doesn't mean I don't have to work hard. Like, I have to work hard after that, which I do, which is a little bit like, I should really hope so. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Like, mm-hmm. if you get, but I also wonder, I think it kind of depends on how powerful the parent is, right? Like, you could probably get your foot in the door, do a mediocre or just an average job, and then continue to get another job.
What oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's the other side of it. It's like, even if you take this doctor thing, right? Like, to get your first job as a doctor, you have to do all the hard work first. You have to go to medical
yeah,
school.
Yeah, yeah,
you have
yeah.
to pass med boards. You have to be a resident. Whereas... when these folks say foot in the door, they mean the job they got was actor, which is...
So are you saying that doesn't require a five-year residency and four well, additional years of medical school?
But that's the thing. For most people, it absolutely does.
Yeah, yeah,
It does require that, because you have to come to Hollywood, audition for 4 or 5 years, be good.
Eat dirt for years. Yeah. yeah,
and also like be, give, you know... you know, meet the right people, know the right stuff, you know, make the right contact. So yeah, that's the thing. It's that like, yeah, again, they just don't understand. And how could they? In what world could they know what it takes to get to even where they started? But they don't know.
Right. And you know, the other interesting thing is, I think Gwyneth said this in the article. She said, I just hope that my children always feel free to pursue exactly what they want to do, irrespective of what anybody's going to think or say. And I think that's another example of like not having very many ordinary parents, because I do not want my child to pursue whatever she wants. You know what I mean? Like, I specifically want her to pursue something that is sustainable and stable. You know what I mean? Like, I can't, like, the idea that my daughter should go into this career, like, nightmare. And so I feel like that's a privilege to be able yeah. to say that. Mm-hmm. It really
yeah.
is
yeah.
some kind of privilege. Although I will say one thing that I find, you know, infuriating is when, and I think being a director is maybe a little bit different, but like, I remember seeing the movie The Moon. I may have even mentioned it on the show before, but that movie Moon is made by a filmmaker named Duncan Zoe Haywood Jones, who is the son of David Bowie. And I didn't know. I remember raving about this movie, and someone's like, oh yeah, that's David Bowie's son. And I was like, what? No, take it back. Because I wanted so desperately for this guy to have like a rags to riches story of like, you know, making movies on a VHS tape with nothing, you know what I mean? And then getting the opportunity to make this incredible film and getting awards for it. But that's not the story, right? I will yeah. say, I think it's a little harder to get to be able to direct a film. A lot of people have to put a lot of money.
Yeah. That's
into
the thing.
You.
He might have been making movies on VHS, but it was with a full crew when he was 11 years old.
Right, 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 right. Right. David Bowie was able to hire a casual like, production assistant.
Just like a small amount of financing from my father.
Yeah, yeah. Like when I was 12. Yes. Yeah. Totally. But have you guys had that experience where someone has made something that you're just in love with and they are just the so... they've you know come from a basket of elitism or whatever as opposed to the basket of deplorables. I don't know why I said that.
Well, I had this experience recently, but it was actually a very pleasant one. This is like, so this was like Nepo movie to the max, but I think it works really well. Have you guys seen You're So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah, a Sandler family production?
Yes, I did see that. Wait, so who's the Nepo baby in that?
Both of his daughters and his wife are in the movie.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And I think they all give great performances, particularly like the star of the movie, his daughter, Sunny. Yeah. She crushes. She's so good. But going into the movie, I was like, okay, come on. Like, is this going to be any good? Like, this is like... You know, big Hollywood guy brings his family. They're going to make a movie. They put it on Netflix. I was so in love with this movie. And it made me realize, like, the thing about Nepo baby discourse that's annoying isn't necessarily the fact that Nepo babies exist. It's like when people get defensive because it's like there are people doing good work out here. Yes, with extra boost and whatnot. But hey, if you fall flat on your face, even with all of the help, like maybe that's something to look into. Yeah.
I think that's really important. I think the kind of graceful way to handle this is like, don't worry about your kids or whatever. They're going to be just fine. Just have a conversation about like, hey, people will come to you and say you only got this job because of your parents. And you should just be like, yeah, I'm so lucky I did get some help from my parents.
Yeah.
And like, I hope I can rise to the occasion or something like that. Totally. Just say, do like a nice, graceful, owning it type statement and then move on, right? And then and then it defangs the term entirely.
If your biggest obstacle in your career is the judgment of other people, you are in a fantastic position. You know what I mean?
But also, if the biggest obstacle in your career is the judgment of other people, welcome. Like, that's what it is. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
The only response to you're a Nepo baby, you only got what you got because your parents is, yeah, dog, definitely. What do you drink it? I got this next one.
Like, yes!
That's it.
I love that. Easy. Absolutely. Let's even it out.
Of course.
Let's even it out with rounds of cocktails. All right, folks, let me know. Do you have the perfect answer to you only got this job because you're a Nepo baby? Me and Andrew floated some. I'm dying to hear the perfect answers. Let's take a quick break and learn about our sponsor. And then when we're back, we'll continue chatting.
Your time starts now. Theranos is a combination of which two words?
Therapy and Thanos.
From ZSP Media, it's Past Perfect, the time-traveling trivia show. I'm Simone Palanin. What does YOLO stand for?
You only live once.
Who was the first female Secretary of State?
Jenna Reno.
New episodes drop on Fridays. Find Past Perfect wherever you listen.
I'm fighting for my life!
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. And we are back, and we're going to get into it with topic number 1.5. Okay, I didn't actually tell you guys about this topic because I was waiting to see if anything would actually happen. So we're just going to riff because Congress is still leaderless and rudderless and possibly soulless. Tom Emmer, who was the House GOP's number 3 dude, narrowly won the nomination, but then Trump made a statement against him, and then 24 Freedom Caucus people went after him. So he dropped his bid, which I totally don't... I can see how that happens, because when Trump makes a statement against you and all that stuff, it's like your life becomes a nightmare because his fans are just hardcore and they are relentless and they will never let you go, and it sucks. So he dropped his bid. Then ultra-conservative Mike Johnson from Louisiana threw his hat in the race. And as of the time of this taping, I don't know what has happened. But he is an ultra-conservative. Just a couple of fun facts about him. He was on Trump's impeachment defense team. He played a leading role in recruiting House Republicans to sign a legal brief supporting a lawsuit to overturn the 2020 election results. He's just got some fun credits, okay? My question, Andrew, is how do you feel about the GOP and the House of Representatives in disarray?
I guess to me it's like, yeah, this is what happens when you let the people who don't think government should function run the government or run their section of the government. It's like, yeah, of course. I guess I am less of the lay down with dogs, get fleas, ha ha ha, at the sort of triangulating Republicans who sided with the MAGA side of things. Yeah, so I don't know. This is like precisely what you get, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, what do you think, Simone?
Yeah, I mean, it's just very disheartening. I don't know. I think probably like a lot of people, I'm having a lot of like political fatigue, and there is this sense of like, what the fuck, man? Like, what? Who? Like, where do you? I don't know. Where do you put your faith? Like, basically, I'm like, you know, turning back to like community driven leadership, and like I'm sort of like lost my faith in Washington, and I'm like, what can we do? What can
on
I do with the people
level.
Directly around me to take care of things? Because we are not being looked out for.
I absolutely love that. And it's something that we've like talked about on the show before. When DC's got you down, what's happening with your local park? What's happening with your local school council? What's happening with your local... I can't think of a third thing because I'm losing my mind. But what happened with your local third thing? You know, like I think you're absolutely right. There's community driven stuff, and this is gonna sort itself out. It may be we might get an unpleasant person to do the job, but like, you know,
it was
we just
never
have to...
not going to be an unpleasant person.
Yeah, yeah.
Given who's in charge.
Yeah. It's. I mean, it's. The chances are that it is an unpleasant person, and like you know, we'll weather that storm, and it'll you know, and we just have to move on to the next thing. Like I think part of it is the enjoyment that the Freedom Caucus gets out of the noise that they create. So I would say let's not even give them the pleasure of making that noise. You know what I mean? Like giving them too much attention makes them just crazy out even more. That's
yeah,
what they love.
They're influencers. They're sort of like Nazi influencers.
That's so depressing.
Allegedly.
Oh my God.
It's true. They're just influencers. On another weird note, Jenna Ellis, who's a former lawyer for Trump's campaign, basically pleaded guilty to, she admitted to making false statements while conspiring to overturn the 2020 election results in Georgia. And here's the fun thing. She has agreed to testify against other defendants, including Donald Trump. Anyways, just an interesting little from the Trump world. That dude has so many legal problems. It is hilarious. Again, we don't need to like follow them all, you know, beat by beat or anything. Do literally anything else with your time. And I'll just keep like, you know, a vague handle on what's going on. And if people of Fake the Nation need to know, I'll let you guys know. But my main, recommendation for everybody is don't care too much. I just thought it was interesting to you.
It's going to be wild when he's in the Oval Office with like an ankle monitor on, but
oh my God.
Just for that imagery, I don't know. I'm kind of a...
You're bummed, but that's honestly the most likely outcome. That's the one where everyone kind of wins, unfortunately.
Damn, that's the image that that gets burned into the like cultural consciousness. If that happens.
That's a generational meme right there. That's a world historic meme. All right, folks. Again, who cares about these things? Do literally anything else in your own community. And now let us move on to actual topic number two, which is that tech billionaire Marc Andreessen, known for being the co-founder of Netscape and Mosaic and for having a lot of money and saying a bunch of things from his mouth hole, this time has come out with a techno-optimist manifesto. He says throughout this screed that the gist that basically, quote, we believe that there is no material problem, whether created by nature or by technology, that cannot be solved with more technology. And it was... it was like a really weird read. It's first of all, he it's all this we something, and I don't know. There's no co-signers to this blog post, and he's such a like big voice in the tech community. Like all of Silicon Valley, like perked up. Like what is Marc Andreessen saying? Which is why I heard about it, but. He wrote, like, we had a problem of starvation, so we invented the Green Revolution. We had a problem of darkness, so we invented electric lighting. We had a problem of cold, so we invented indoor heating. He just really believes that no matter the issue, technology will get ahead of it, and that we shouldn't get in the way of technology doing that. What did you think of this manifesto, Andrew?
I mean, it's like... the sort of classic tech bro, like Ayn Rand bullshit kind of thought, I guess. Yeah. The thing to me that was like really, really stood out was like the conflation of technology, quote unquote, with Silicon Valley is the thing. It's like, it's not what he's saying broadly about technology as in the sciences, like sure, sort of, okay, whatever. But what he's really saying is us like Silicon Valley, like
bros.
Bozos are the keepers of what is technology. Cause like the other thing I was like looking at his I don't know, do venture capitalist people have resumes, portfolios? I don't know what the fuck you actually call it, but like,
he was
part of Uber, I believe. Which is demonstrably a thing that did not improve anything. You know, what it did was that it took venture capital money to like destroy an existing industry by undercutting it because it was not regulated. So like, as far as like innovation in finding labor loopholes, yes, Silicon Valley is
well done. Yeah.
But
he's
like,
also, I should mention, on the board of Meta, which Facebook and Instagram, which also we could talk about the health impacts of Meta.
Yeah, it's just this thing where it's like, yes, maybe technology, broadly speaking, but that's like the public university system. That's like scientific research. It is not Silicon Valley. And like him like conflating technology and Silicon Valley is the thing that is like kind of odious.
This is actually my favorite point, which I haven't even, I only read a couple of critiques or whatever, but like this is my favorite point, Andrew. You have made my favorite point. Ding, 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 ding. You get an award of literally nothing but for making my favorite point. But that's absolutely true, because I was just like, he's so like his mindset is about tech platforms, which to me, I'm like, is a tech platform gonna suck the CO2 out of the air? Tell me how a tech platform is gonna do that. And so what I wanna know is about real technology. And that is electricity, that is happening at universities, that is where, you know, that is happening with, like, I don't know, a guy and his kite in a rainstorm or whatever. Like, that's how technology that can solve those kinds of problems is sort of developed. In Silicon Valley is another thing, and it is technology, but it's like a very particular type of technology who's motivated 5,000% by money.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know that innovators in these other, like in a research lab, are not motivated by money in that way. They are just not.
Well, and also just not, I know I've talked too much, but like, they're also like, this thing is also like sort of insidiously advocating for sucking resources from things that we already know work. The idea that more technology is the solution to, say, climate change, sorry, alleged climate change, is like the idea that the solution to climate change doesn't exist yet and we need to VC our way out of it is actually taking money from the things that we know will take carbon out of the atmosphere. You know, more regulation on cars, building cities differently, more economic equality so that like large percentages of the of humanity aren't burning coal, for instance, for heat. Like these are things that already exist. So the solution to this is not more technology. It's the existing technology that we've already done. And advocating that more technology is how we get out of this is actually how we take resources out of the things that we know work.
Simone, what do you think?
I have so many thoughts on this because I actually grew up in the Silicon Valley and like the Bay Area really change a lot because of this like influx of the tech industry. So I don't have very nice thoughts about these people. But my, I mean, one of my big takeaways from this was just that like Mark Andreessen is a wealthy person, and wealthy people who are unaccustomed to discomfort try to use their resources to eradicate like the anxiety that they feel around being like fragile and mortal. And then they disguise it with these like declarative statements and like, you know, this like authoritative voice, when ultimately what he's saying is like, I need places to put my capital so that it will grow and I will become richer.
Yeah.
But it's like under this language of like, I'm trying to change the future. You know what I mean? I think Uber is like a perfect example of like, you know, the ethos of Silicon Valley, which is like basically brand building and marketing disguised as innovation. And it's basically, yeah, these like places for people to put their money and to grow their money kind of like with little thought of anything else. And like he talks obsessively about growth. And I'm like, you know who else is obsessed with growth? Cancer cells, like, you know, that's kind of my feeling about this. Yeah. The Silicon Valley tech ethos.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, I don't know if you had heard about D-cell narratives, if that was a term that has crossed the transom for you guys. So this is my first time. Apparently one of his Uber pals responded to this piece sort of like, oh, I totally agree with you and I'm tired of these D-cell narratives, these quote D-cell narratives. And I was like, what is a D-cell narrative? And it's basically these decelerationist narratives that basically is like a slang term used by these guys for people who don't believe in, you know, innovation and growth and whatever. And again, it's like, I do believe, well, I don't know, but like growth is like a tricky term because in economics it has a meaning and technology has a meaning, whatever. And in, you know, in terms of like climate science, it might be antithetical to the environment. So let's put growth aside for a second, but just in terms of like innovation, again, like as Andrew was saying, I'm pro. I just don't want it to be this stuff, and I don't want it to be necessarily profit driven, because we don't always find the best shit when it's profit driven, you know. And sometimes we do. Look, I'm not saying that, you know, vaccine companies weren't paid to develop vaccines. You know, pharmaceutical companies, they were, but there's plenty of stuff that happened. You know, you hear stories about people like kind of inventing the X-ray and then dying because they use themselves on these X-ray machines in a way that was unsafe, you know, and they ended up with like cancer and stuff. That's the kind of innovation I want to see.
Yeah.
I want to see people putting themselves in harm's way for the science. No, but you know what I mean? Like, that's just not about profit. It's like about something bigger. And we still have that. We still have that. And I think the really sad thing about Silicon Valley, besides the fact that it has changed San Francisco in ways that have made it like unrecognizable, the other thing about Silicon Valley is that it has sucked a lot of talent out of research fields, and it makes me so depressed. You know, you think about, like, you know, the talent brain drain from places like Iran. You know, my dad was a part of that brain drain, you know, for better or worse, where he came to America and he got really, really well trained in cardiovascular and thoracic surgery, and he went on and has had an incredible career doing that. It's like that kind of guy gets brain drained now and then goes to Silicon Valley, and then they're what? Doing what? You know what I mean? And
they're signing off on a hot new app that'll fix your own cardiothoracic situation, but all you have to do is, it's
right.
It's awful.
Yeah. It's awful. Okay. Well, folks, check out or don't check out this this manifesto by Marc Andreessen. But it was, I mean, it's fascinating. It's also just like interesting for me to get to have a glimpse into the chatter in the tech circles, because I don't often do it. And it was interesting to see what was going on over there. So this is one of the things that's going on over there.
It's so not surprising that the people who think D-cell is cool were positive that AI could replace writers. It's like, okay, bros.
They do love to coin terms.
Artless and pathetic.
Totally. Again, coming off a strike where we're trying very hard to like prove that this is like not what we want as a humanity. All right.
Yeah.
Folks, let us move on to topic number three. So, there is a new study from the NEA, the National Endowment of the Arts, about the decline in attendance at museums and theater. And I'm just going to give you a couple of stats, and then I just want you to react to some of those stats. Okay, so here's something interesting. Art-making activities have shown growth from 2017, which was the last time they did one of these studies. So art-making like leatherwork, metalwork, woodwork, and playing musical instruments has actually increased. Were you surprised to see that? Or what'd you think? Andrew, or you're nodding your head.
I am, listen, the problem with this discussion a little bit is there are only two sides really to this. So broadly speaking, I'm generally supportive of the notion of what the NEA does. However, looking at the way that they define art, essentially, is this, I think that's the thing that I take issue with. And it's just this like super old guard, like no one's going to the theater or no one is going to art museums. And yet all these like other activities that are the arts, just not what the NEA people would prefer to think of as, quote, the arts, are popular. Like, humanity is not different. So why is it that attendance is down at these specific things?
Well, okay, Simone, did you have an issue with the way the NEA is looking at arts writ large?
That was a very thoughtful response, Andrew. I'm like, I didn't think about that particular variable.
I didn't think about that either.
But I mean, it makes sense. I mean, like museums, right? Stuffy institutions. It makes sense, I think. Like, I haven't seen a real big effort. I mean, let's talk about museums kind of broadly, but like to be more accessible or to like sort of, you know, update their approach with the times and try to like reach new audiences. In terms of people art making, though, like that kind of makes sense to me just because like in the pandemic, I know a lot of people who were kind of returning to these like craftier parts of themselves. And
yeah,
so I don't know. I could see like people holding on to that.
Yeah.
Potentially, you know.
I think that makes sense to me. Right. Like, you know, you were like, I've always wanted to make a leather purse or whatever. And like, You get to doing that woodwork. Actually, have it, you know, a friend who kind of very seriously took up woodwork,
yeah,
and and amped his activity during the pandemic.
Yeah, I watched a lot of TikToks of people making art. So in a way, I too participated.
Yeah.
Well, and that might be, I mean, I don't know if you're including like the consumption of art in that way, Andrew, when you're talking about what the NEA is determining is the consumption
yes.
of art.
I mean, to me, the thing that jumped out at me from the article that was that you guys sent was like that, like other is up, like which means the people are absolutely interested in like consuming and relating to and attending creative things. It's just like we are in the era where the afterthoughts of the old guard are the art,
or they like, are the actual fine. Yeah,
yeah,
the attendance rates that they're talking about, so art museum gallery visits, attendance at jazz, classical or Latin salsa music performances, musical and non-musical plays, craft fairs, outdoor performing arts festivals, operas and ballet, and other dance forms, and movies. Okay, so that's a very large swath of things that people could do. For the record, TikTok is not on that list, but there's a lot of things on that list. So attendance at all of those things have seen like a 6 percentage point decline. For visual arts attendance, that actually did not see as severe a decline, just like a couple of points. And then interestingly, parks saw kind of a flattened attendance. So people still go to parks. I guess that also tracks with the pandemic thing of like going back into nature. I think like with a study like this, is the NEA trying to just say, you guys, we're on our phones too much, please stop or whatever? I mean, is that like what we're supposed to take from this?
Yes.
Probably, right?
It's just like anything that sounds like the reasoning is ultimately get off your phone is like both correct and old. Those two things are true.
It's correct and old, and also no one does. I don't know. Sometimes people do it, and then sometimes I don't know. It's like I would really truly rather myself do all of these things, these various forms. I would rather go to a craft fair or, you know, a musical or non-musical play than be on my phone. I think there's just also something about the rigors of modern life that make it more difficult than I think maybe it was like 20 years ago. I don't know. I could be talking out of my butt here, but I do feel there's something difficult going on.
I think it's an access thing too. Like it's just, your phone is very accessible and like the theater is less accessible than a device right in your pocket, right? So I do think like that is part of it. But that can't be your whole answer, right? Like your whole critique can't just be like, well, audiences are so like tech addicted and that's the full reason why this is like people aren't coming. Like there are other variables too, you know. I think that
funding, like the quality, you know, maybe the quality of the shows are down or something because of funding or whatever. Funding that goes into outreach and publicity, I mean, I don't know. That could be another reason.
But it's also like what you define. I still just think it's like what you define as art. Like if going to the park qualifies as art, like I'm sorry, all of TikTok also qualifies as art. You might not like it or think it's good, but like you are getting a creative point of view pushed to you in this instance. And like, yeah, like I guess that's the thing. It's like, is the NEA the National Endowment for the Arts or the National Endowment for the arts that we like and we think are arts? Like, and again, if you include parks, your swath is so wide that like, how the hell are you going to not have, you know, I don't like TikTok either, but you can't not say it's as much art as a fucking park.
Well, I'll say, I mean, look, and I, in defense of this survey, Dave, first of all, didn't say the thing about phones. This is me extrapolating. So they're not trying to be like, guys, get off your phone. They didn't actually say that. One of the things they talk about, again, I thought it was interesting the range of artistic activities that they chose. It's like, it was literally kind of everything except the stuff on your phone is like what is in this this study. And they found, and I wonder if you think this is surprising, social dancing is the most popular activity across all forms of personal arts, performance, and creation, involving 22% of adults. So 22% of adults do social dancing. And I was not entirely clear what that means. Is that like going to the club? Or what do we... Is that...
I think so.
Okay, but line dancing has been having a little bit of a resurgence. I don't know if this is in your circles, but like, that is surprising though. I didn't know that it was that.
It is surprising,
much
right?
Of a thing.
I mean, it's basically, basically almost one out of every four adults like do a bunch of dancing, and that's their main way of expressing themselves in an artistic way. I would like to lament the exclusion of, talking about exclusion, Andrew. I would like to just say that karaoke should have been on this list, and I'm like personally offended. It is one of my forms of expression and art making.
I can't help but notice being a guest on a podcast is not here, which is like to me.
Okay,
very,
yeah, many don't give a shit about. The NEA has very specifically, I feel like this was like, by the way, Nagin, what you do every week, not an art, just so you know. I felt it, NEA, I felt it. Message received. Okay. this makes a lot of sense. Folks, I'm curious to know, are you a part of the 22% of adults who go social dancing, is what it's called, which may be line dancing or going to the club and or dancing in front of your mirror when nobody's watching?
Parasocial dancing.
So folks, hit me up, let me know, where are you? And also, I do want to say finally, actually, that I do hope there is some incredible stuff going on out there, some really great things to see, and it is different to experience it live, and I hope that you do. You know what I mean? It is. It's different. It's different. It's mesmerizing and all-consuming and in just a different way. By the way, I went to I think I mentioned this last week. I went to see U2 at the Sphere. So,
you went to that? Oh my god!
I went.
How are
you? Wait, Andrew, did I talk about Andrew McGuire? Did I talk? I didn't. Okay, I didn't mention it on an episode yet, but I did. I went to U2 at the Sphere and. So there's an example, again, and it's like, does this technology matter? It totally doesn't. But it was so beautiful. And I'm like a U2 head because like I was just given a cassette tape as a child from my brother who's 13 years older than me. And anyways, and that age difference was also, we recognize it in the audience at the concert. But it's because it's like I am such a dork for U2. And it's like not something I remember going to college and just assuming that everyone would love U2 as much as I did. Nobody gave two shits. But anyway, I really, really, really love U2. And I realized something about the experience. They're such an optimistic band. They really believe in like democracy and humanity. And they're just, I mean, seeing a U2 show will just like uplift your spirits. And I realized something so embarrassing about myself, which is that I believe they were formative for me in my development of optimism as like a way of life, because that is what they do. That's like their Bono's lyrics. Like their whole thing is just like, no, it's we can do this. Sometimes things are sad, but like humanity's great. And like, I just saw some breathtaking shit in the Sphere is incredible. Like it's so dumb to say it's immersive, like obviously that's how they're promoting it, but it is so immersive.
What was the coolest thing you saw in the Sphere?
Okay, and I don't want to give anything away. So, like, if you are planning on going, because and you're not, because nobody is a fan the way I am. But anyway, earmuff for the next 30 seconds. But one of the coolest things I saw was they got to a song and then near the end where they show, like, the view outside the sphere. So you're sitting inside the sphere and they show you the streets of Las Vegas outside, just outside the sphere. And you're like, oh, that's interesting. And then they deconstruct the entire city of Las Vegas, like brick by brick, whatever. They deconstruct it until it's the desert. And then the desert, and then just like, you just literally feel like you're in the desert and a sun comes up and the sun goes down. You experience a day. And then it's just like, and you just literally feel like you're just there in the desert experiencing that day. And then fucking the band is just like playing. And then at some point they're like floating on an ocean and it's just crazy. It's just like they're floating on an ocean and it's so cool. Wow. It was just beautifully
that
done.
Sounds amazing. I will just amazing. Point out to the NEA, this is a live performance that also features the biggest phone that's ever been created.
Maybe Mark Andreessen totally has a point. Technology will save us.
Wait, can I tell you guys the last embarrassing thing about having seen this concert is that I took a nausea pill before going because I was nervous that one of those people, I can't wear one of those VR headsets because it'll just make me sick. So I took an anti-nausea pill just because I just wanted to have a good time. I didn't want to think about that. And I didn't get sick. I was fine. But that's, I went to those lengths just so that nothing would get in the way of me and my enjoyment, which was I felt like a child in there. So anyways, I highly recommend. Yeah.
That's a really funny kind of drug to take before a concert.
Yeah, that was low on the list of next words.
Like, why didn't I just do, like, I know, why didn't I just do Molly like a normal fucking person? All right, folks, that is the end of the show. My God, thank you so much for having these conversations with me. You're both so smart, insightful, talented, good-looking. I could go on, but what I really want is for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Simone, where do they do that?
Yes, you can follow me at Simone Polanin. You can figure out how to spell that on your own on Instagram and Twitter, or X.
And remind them of your podcasts.
Yes, my podcast's Past Perfect. It is a trivia show, and Not Past It is a history show. Look out for those.
Absolutely look out for those. And Andrew, where do people find you?
Oh, my podcast is Yo, Is This Racist? I'm just my name on... I kind of made an effort to grab most social media, so I'm probably fucking somewhere. Andrew T, last name is T-I. It's all caps. I know it doesn't matter, but it's all caps.
All right, folks, follow Andrew, subscribe to the pod, do all of that. And you know where to find me and all the things that I do. And ladies and gentlemen, I have dates in Philadelphia with a Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me stand-up tour, in Reston, Virginia, in D.C. with the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me tour. I might have another New York date for Wait, Wait. Let's see. And anyways, it's there's things that are on my website. So go to the website and see. And again, go to patreon.com/NagineFarsat to support the show. You get bonus episodes, and the bonus episodes are fun and ridiculous. And what I would really like to do is thank everyone who makes the show a possibility, our fantastic producer, Andrew McGuire. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum who makes the show a reality. Thanks to Gabby Alter for our wonderful theme music. You can email us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com with any ideas that you might have. And otherwise, we will be back in your earballs. Oh, on Friday because of the Golden Bachelor. We will be back in your earballs. Next week in the Golden Bachelor will be in your earballs, like, later. But we are still doing episode recaps of the Golden Bachelor, so stay tuned for those. Okay, goodbye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.